Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And it is once again, folks, Okay. Once again, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I think it's gone. I'm looking for something, folks. And once again, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Sorry about the volume mess. It's happy holidays to everybody. Happy holidays to all of you out there who are celebrating. Yeah. Yeah. As I've stated yesterday on the show, it's always, holidays are always festive around my house, at least. And it's a great thing. It's wonderful. And welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk about times, making the world a better place one show at a time. And as always, don't forget, I just published a Christmas story. It's on Amazon. It's pretty decent. It's pretty cool. And I'm reminding people, and it's free. That's the greatest part about it. It's free. I mean, you talk about Kindle Unlimited. I mean, don't even worry about that. This is totally, totally unfree, because I think Kindle Unlimited is a scam anyway. You know, I mean, Amazon is getting paid for that. But this is free. This is totally free. I mean, all you got to do is download it on your device, whatever device you have, your phone, your computer, your tablet, whatever. That's internet connected. And you have to be, I think you have to be a member of Amazon. You have to have bought something on Amazon to do that. But anyway, a majority of the people are Amazon shoppers. So, I mean, check the book out. Check it out. It's short. It's short and sweet, but it's a powerful story. It's called Merry Christmas, Mason Featherstone. Mason Featherstone is the star of the story. Check it out. I mean, you got people, you got authors all over the damn universe plugging their radio on, plugging their book on radio. Even I have authors on my show plugging their book, talking about their book. And I decided, what the hell? Why not plug my own books on my own show, right? Instead of always plugging someone else's book. So that's what I'm doing here. It's a Christmas story with a heart. It's entertaining. It's warm and it's thoughtful. And if you can, leave a review. A lot of people don't like reviews. The book is being downloaded every day. But a lot of the folks are not leaving reviews. A few reviews would be great. But I do know that the book is being downloaded. And that's what happens a lot in the book industry. You're looking for reviews. People will download your book every single minute of the day. But the majority of those people will not leave an interview, even if they say they're going to leave an interview. So it's rough. It's tough trying to get interviews. And I, like so many other authors out there, we will not buy any interviews. I mean, these people won't cash for just one for one book review. This is crazy. And Amazon has policies on that. But I'm pretty sure a lot of authors get away with buying and swapping interviews. A lot of times when you swap an interview with someone, you may be swapping and swap. I'm saying interview. I mean, book review. Every time if you're swapping a book review with someone, another author, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a poor review. You know, I mean, it's going to be written poorly. Even though it may be a 5-star review, some authors will give you a 5-star review just because you give them one, you know. I myself prefer an honest review. I think it's a great story. It's just in time for Christmas. And I love plugging my books and stuff on my radio show. You know, I don't have to pay a lot of money to go on someone else's radio show to plug a book. You know, it's called Merry Christmas, Mason Featherstone. You will not regret it. Download it today. Get your copy just in time for the holidays. All right. Let's move right along. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It is great. The website tells me it's about 51 degrees out there. Folks, it is unseasonably warm for the last couple of days of November. I mean, we should be freezing it. We should be freezing our asses off. I was just out earlier today, and I'm seeing this is the last leg of November. We got 2 more days, tomorrow and Wednesday, and tomorrow and the day is 29th. So we got 1 more day actually for the end of November. 1 more day. Tomorrow is the 30th from the date of this show. It's the 30th of November. Thursday is December 1st, and we are having weather as if it's springtime. Even by this time, a few winters ago, a few seasons ago, I mean, by this time, the trees, I'm talking about the city of Chicago, the trees are devoid of leaves. I mean, the leaves are falling off the trees. The trees are bare, no leaves. But however, November 29th, 2016, today, at the broadcast of this show, the date of the broadcast of this show, the trees outside my window are blooming. Just like they bloom in the springtime, they're blooming. Instead of the leaves falling off the trees, this is fall, they're blooming. The grass on the ground is blooming as if the hell with winter. It's going to stay warm. And I predicted this 2 or 3 months ago. And I said it's going to be a nice winter, a mild winter, because summer was so great. Summer was unprecedented. It was a great summer. It was a beautiful summer almost every single day. And I got on the radio, if you possibly listened to that broadcast, and said it was going to be a mild winter. And that summer was 2016. The summer of 2016 in the city of Chicago was beautiful, wonderful. And did we regret it? I didn't regret anything. You know, I'm pretty sure that people, the most people of the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois, they did not regret it either. But this is unprecedented right now as I speak, because tomorrow is the last day of November. And It is. It feels like it's 70 degrees outside, folks. 70 degrees. And the trees are blooming. The grass is growing. Instead of all of this stuff being wiped away by the storms and the cold weather, and, you know, you still got people out here wearing leggings and short, tight blouses. You know, the breasts, the young lady, the breasts are falling out, right? They are enjoying the weather, you know, shorts, you know, when they should be all bundled up, cold, gloves, scarf, skull cap, trying to keep warm, running for the train, right? Running for your car. But it's not. It's beautiful out there. And I'm not complaining, people. I'm truly not complaining. But it's just weird. Okay, let me say this. The weather people have said, and they're always wrong, believe me. I barely listen to some of these weather spots anymore, some of these weather broadcasts anymore. Anyway, they say it's going to snow later on. We just have to see if that's going to happen, because lately they have been off the mark big time. I think they've been off the mark for centuries, actually. But they get paid big bucks to be wrong, I'm hearing. Okay, my guest on the show today is author Todd Thomas. Let me say something. A lot of these guests that are supposed to be or will be on the show late November, a lot of these guests were booked maybe two and a half months ago. So a lot of things can happen between now and 2.5 months ago, talking about a guest being booked on my show. Okay, I sent out a message. They respond to the message. And suddenly I approve them to be on the show. And then when it comes time for them to actually do the show, there's a no call. There's a no show. So by booking these guests so many months ago, a lot of them, you know, have forgotten. A lot of them have had something else has come up, you know. It's just like taking a day off of work without calling in. It happens. You know, I've had that happen to me several times, and it doesn't bother me because the show is going to go on with or without a guest. But what I'm trying to say is, for all of you out there who are listening and you expect a certain person on the show because it's been announced, it's been publicized, suddenly this guest does not show up, there could be a lot of reasons for that. You know, not particularly my show. It could be that, as I've got through saying, you know, there's something comes up. Maybe they got hit by a bus or didn't wake up this morning, or they forgot to write the date down that they were supposed to be on the show on their calendar or whatever. And it happens. You know, it happens. So don't crush me. don't send me nasty emails or say something foul. I mean, these things happen. People show, said they're going to show up. They don't show up. They get booked. They don't show. It's not my problem. I mean, there's no money changing hands here. There's no contracts or anything. You don't do the show. You don't do the show. Bingo. We'll find someone else to do the show. All right. Author Ted Thomas, Todd Thomas, is going to be on the show. You know, a lot of times I have these authors on the show because I myself is an author and I love hearing about other people's books. But I understand that majority of the talk shows are either on the either if they're over air or traditional radio or internet radio, they're talking about politics, they're talking about sports, and not books. But so, you know, this is a political show. We talk politics, especially before Donald Trump was elected, and somehow we've, you know, cut back on it. But, you know, we're going to still be talking politics. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the world. We're going to be talking about how to make the world a better place, what it takes to make the world a better place, as we've been doing, I have been doing for a long time, and I will continue to do this as long as the George Wilder Jr. Show is on Blog Talk Radio and there is an audience out there for it. Because, you know, I mean, it's so easy to get on the radio. I mean, you can just, anybody can have it, but you have to have the stamina, the talent, and the withal to, deal with the ups and downs of live radio and stuff like that. It takes sometimes, for some radio hosts, It takes a while. It takes a while. And you have to, if you want to build an audience, you have to actually stay on the radio a while so people can find you. But I've had people ask me, have I ever gone to, did I take any courses in radio broadcasting? No, not a one. I just sat down the first day and did it. I just thought I could do it. That's all. I just felt I could do it. And I find out that I can do it because I get a lot of responses from people telling me so. It's not just me saying that I'm good at this. It's other people who are saying those things. So I might as well ride with it, right? And so I've taken advantage of it. I mean, I do screw up sometimes, folks. I do step over my words or slur my words or sometimes. But, you know, I mean, if you watch any broadcaster or any radio host, if you listen to any radios, a lot of them, you know, make a graph sometimes. But, you know, as long as it's not too out of proportion. Okay, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me right here on Blog Talk Radio. And it's great. I love it, folks. It's beautiful. And Christmas is on its way. I mean, it's great. It's a great time of the year. And don't forget to pick up my short story from Amazon. All you got to do is go to Amazon, put George Wilder Jr. up there, and all that stuff just rolls down. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back. We need to take a break right here.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
All right. All right. Okay. All right. That's enough. That's enough. That's enough. Okay. All right. Let's talk about some things that has gone on in Chicago. I'm always talking about Chicago, but a lot of the things that go on in Chicago can also mirror other states, other countries around the world. And in Chicago, as I said yesterday on the show, folks, it was heartbreaking for me to say that. Over the Thanksgiving weekend, we had 68 shootings in the city of Chicago. 68. Not including 8 people or more fatally shot, killed. So in total, that's 76 shootings, including 8 people murdered. And I've said several times before that this is not right. And now a lot of community leaders out here are trying to find solutions to solve the problem. One cop has just been sued for his second fatal shooting, in which no gun was recovered, okay? So this is pissing people off. This cop then shot 2 people claiming that they had a gun when no gun was found. So they fired him. They should have fired him the first time when he did this. So they let him stay on the force. And by letting him stay on the force, he shot another young man in the back who was running away, whom he told everybody, whom he told everyone that he, this guy, this young man had a gun, and no gun was found. And it's just awful, these shootings that are going on. My son said, Daddy, there is no peace. There is peace. Give me a break. Peace. You know, so it's tough, you know, to announce every damn weekend, if not every day, multiple shootings that are going on in the city of Chicago. It's just ridiculous. And I've said yesterday and on many shows, we need new leadership. We need a new mayor. We need a new governor. We need a new superintendent. I get so sick and tired of these killings and shootings and things going on in the city of Chicago, crime. And all the superintendent can do is put his face on television and try to say that the police is not to blame, or that he feels sorry for this, or that he's trying to come up with solutions. Or like I said yesterday, these people don't have any solutions. They don't have any practical ways of ending violence or lowering it. They don't. Every time there is a shooting, a police shooting, this guy comes on television, you know, instead of... The fact is that every time he goes with Eddie Johnson, I'm talking about the superintendent of police, every time he goes on television and talks about a murder, whether it's being committed by a Chicago cop or domestic violence or anything that goes on in this city, he doesn't realize when he's up on that stage giving a speech about the crime in the city of Chicago and how he can't seem to stop it, there's more crime being committed just by him being up there on the stage. As he's talking, some woman is getting plummeted. Somebody is getting shot. Somebody is getting robbed. You know, get out here and solve the crime. Stop talking about it. Stop coming up with excuses. We don't need to hear a lot of the things that these people say in some of these press conferences. We'd rather see you out there on the streets, out there walking the beat, deterring, preventing, and catching the thugs that are who are perpetrating this mass atrocity on Chicagoans and elsewhere. It always bothers me that in some of these high crime areas, and I've said this before, in some of these high crime areas, I mean, really high crime areas, you don't see police officers patrolling like they should be. If they were patrolling on foot in the car, a lot of this carnage, these murders and shootings would not happen. And they keep talking about, well, they need more schooling, they need more education, they need more jobs, they need more opportunities. I agree. But still in all, you're going to have the crooks and the criminals and the thugs and the gangs who are not looking for jobs. They're not looking for opportunities. They're not looking for a way out of the ghetto. They're not looking for any of that. They're looking to put a bullet in your fucking skull. That's what they're looking for. And it just pisses me off that the lack of police presence in some of these communities. It really does. You know, and then after 20 people done got shot because there was no police presence there, here comes the police. I mean, they coming in droves, 10, 20, 30, 40 police officers on the scene. Where were you before this incident happened? You see pictures of them, photographs, video of them standing around the crime scene. 10, 20 of them, 30 standing around the crime scene. Where were you at before the crime? Where were you at? A lot of the crimes are committed because there's no police presence. And a lot of the thugs, they know when the police come, they know when the police go, because they're watching. I've said many, many times, in some of these high crime communities, I've said many times, the police need to be a 24/7, have a 24/7 presence in some of these communities. Do not just patrol. The bad guys know when you're patrolling. They know when you leave the community. They know when you come. And they know what to do when you leave. And this is not happening. That's why I say we need new leadership, political leadership. This is just not happening in the city of Chicago. It's crazy to have, it's just nutty and crazy that over the Thanksgiving weekend that we have had 68 shootings in the city of Chicago. Maybe it more wherever you are, but in Chicago, 68 shootings. And that's not including the 8 people fatally shot, bringing the total to 76 shot over the Thanksgiving weekend. I don't even want to mention 4th of July or any of these other holidays. These people, they don't know what they're doing. They don't have any solutions. They don't have any plans. Because if they did, they would tell us. The only time you see cops in the community is after the fact. Where are you before the fact? All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on my little rant here, folks. But it just pisses me off that we pay these people so much money and they give us nothing, little or nothing. And nothing is being said about it. Okay, it's just crazy. But you're going to always hear it on the George Wilder Jr. Show. All right, we see we have a phone call. Let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hey there, George. Hey, this is Todd Thomas calling.
Hey, what's up, guy? How you doing? I wasn't sure if you were going to show up because I know that you were booked a couple of months ago. But welcome to the show, all right?
And yes, here I am.
Yeah, Todd Thomas on the George Wilder Jr. Show, folks. And we're going to have some fun. So tell us about yourself. Give us a little bio. And what do you think we ought to know?
I'm the author of a new book called The It Factor Action Guide. And yeah. It is very much about all of the personal potential that we have. The famous Olympic sprinter, Wilma Rudolph, once said that the potential for greatness lives within each one of us. And yeah. That's very, very much what my book is about. It's about personal potential, and it's about the number one thing that, although I do reveal what I call secrets kicking your it in gear, using your it factor, that it potential that you have. I speak about several secrets, but the main theme of the whole book is about your personal potential and confidence. Confidence is the all-encompassing feature that all of us can use a boost of from time to time in various areas of our life to achieve things that we want to do.
And I totally agree with you. I think there's a lot of people out here with all kinds of talent, all kinds of potential, but it's just not getting out. I think we were put on this earth. We weren't just thrown on this earth. We were put on this earth with some sort of potential and gold in mind. What do you think?
No question. As a matter of fact, George, that's very much in just about one sentence or two summarizes chapter 10 of my book, which is about sharing the fact that I believe that each one of us, you and I and everyone listening and those extended that aren't even are, each one of us has a specific message and a message that we can share with those that we will impact in our lives and that will have an impact on the world in a positive way. And I believe that we all have that message, and it's about getting out there like you are with your show and me coming on your show and doing various shows that I do interviews on. And that is to get that message out there that we have the potential. We need the confidence boost, and we have that message that we need to share with others to help each other, lift each other up.
Yeah, I totally agree, because there's a lot of people out there that need lifting up, and it is overwhelmingly a huge amount of people out here who don't know where they're going. I mean, they're going aimlessly through life, not realizing that they have the potential to be great, to be more than what they are. And, you know, we just got to get the word out there. And a lot of people out there, they're not hearing this show. They're not hearing you. They're not hearing me. And but we have to try to keep trying. So if someone is not showing or exhibiting their potential greatness, how do you get someone to do that, to bring out the greatness within them after they've been so negative on themselves?
Well, sometimes they just need to hear it from somebody else. A lot of times, you know, they can do the positive affirmation thing, which I have my own thoughts on that. You know, telling themselves how great they are, trying to boost their self-esteem. But sometimes they just need to hear it from somebody else. They need to know that somebody else believes in them.
Yeah, I agree.
Even when they don't believe in themselves sometimes, George, and there's stories in my book about this, a guy that was he was dirt poor. He was homeless at times, and now he's a multimillionaire businessman. I interviewed him for my book, and he talks about even when he didn't believe in himself, he had mentors that believed in him. And what he did was he believed in their belief. He didn't believe in himself, but he believed in their belief that they had in him. And a lot of times that's the key for a lot of people. But also another big key is the main thread throughout my book is confidence, and how we need that confidence boost sometimes in areas of our life that are important to us.
Yeah. You're talking about that support.
Definitely. You know, and the support of having a coach or a mentor that believes in you, and you can, even when you don't believe in yourself, you can hang on their belief and let that lift you. Let that lift you and get you, you know, going in the right direction and get your rocket ship off the ground. And a lot of times once you're able to get that rocket ship off the ground and get that momentum, now you can carry yourself forward and pull others with you that may need that sort of help as well.
I totally agree. Do you have your book with you? Can you read us an excerpt?
I do have my book with me. It's kind of across the room here, so I'll just walk across here and let me go to the chapter that I was speaking of, and that is the Share It, which it says I say back in chapter 5, and of course you'll if you want to get the book, and we can talk about that later how to get it, but I alluded to the fact that the secrets revealed in this book aren't necessarily secrets in the truest sense of the word. Many will read what I have revealed here and think or know that they've heard some of this information before. Some will have not read the information, and they'll think and that it is new to them. Those that read this book and say that they've heard these things before, but in different ways, they may dismiss what they read, but some, maybe even you, will read what I have written and see that it is brand new material and will have positive steps that I will help you recommend for you and encourage you in your life. The bottom line of this chapter can be summed up in one question.
Okay.
Why are you here? Why are you here? What is your purpose in this world? Why are you here? And I go on in this chapter to talk about and tell about some stories, some of my own personal stories, George, in my life, numerous times where I was almost killed or could have been killed. And yet I was spared in some way. And I believe it's because I was meant to be here, to not just write this, to be here today, to speak on your show, to speak to the Junior Chamber of Commerce that I'm going to be speaking to soon, to help encourage and inspire those people that will hear that message, that they do have that it factor, they do have that potential in them, and that if they will learn some of the techniques of how to boost their confidence in the areas of their life that's important to them, where they may be lacking confidence, what I call have the confidence breakthrough, then they can realize and they can step out and stretch towards the limits of their potential and what they're capable of doing.
I totally agree. And the fact that you just alluded to that you base a lot of this book on your own experiences, and you're out there to try to motivate others because you've lacked greatness in your life, and maybe someone motivated you to be a better person, and that's why you are where you are today.
Right. You know, I've been a mental performance coach to athletes for a long time, and confidence mm-hmm. is the number one thing I start talking to them about at the beginning when it comes to the mental side of the game. And so I talk a lot about confidence, but you know what's interesting, George, mm-hmm. is that I wasn't always confident myself. See, a lot of people mm-hmm. would look at me and they would think, wow, it's easy for him. You know, he's always been confident, yeah. confident. And that's not the case mm-hmm. at all. I mean, for most of my mm-hmm. adult life, really, I've felt like a failure.
Yeah,
I've had those feelings. My brain would just constantly beat me up and tell me what a failure I was and how I hadn't accomplished this or that or the other. But through some people's coaching, go ahead.
I wanted to say some people that was that experienced some of the things you did back then, they also have people telling them around them, telling them that they're failures, that they can't make it, they can't do it. And a lot of these people, feel that way. You got people around you. Go ahead.
There are those people for sure. And if you allow that to what I mm-hmm. I talk about this about connecting with your thoughts, if you allow those thoughts that those people are saying about you, and you allow those to become your thoughts, and you what I say connect with them, then you're going to be stuck. You're going to be stuck in yeah. that cycle of not accomplishing and not reaching your potential and doing the things that are most important to you. But if you learn how to disconnect from those thoughts, and that's why I talk about this in my book, I talk about it in my coaching. If you learn how to disconnect from your thoughts, to realize that you're going to have those thoughts and people are going to say those things from time to time, but if you'll learn how to not connect yourself with them, to separate yourself mm-hmm. and see yourself as separate from your thoughts, then you can, in spite of those thoughts sometimes, still press on and still take actions to do the things that are most important to you in your life.
All right. Author Tom Thomas on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Where can we go find your book and give us a
sure.
website? Yeah.
Yep. It's at my website. It's Todd mm-hmm. Thomas, T-O-D-D, at mm-hmm. todd-thomas.com. So it's my first name, which is Todd, T-O-D-D, and then you put the dash or hyphen, and then Thomas, mm-hmm. T-H-O-M-A-S.com, Todd-Thomas.com. You find out a lot more about me, and you can get my book there as well.
Oh, it sounds exciting. It sounds great. I know I'm going to go check it out because, I think all of us go through a time or a period not being able to have that potential for greatness. I've always believed that everybody has a talent. You got to probably try to convince them that they're better than what they think they are.
Well, you do. But then what's even more important is for them to learn the techniques to deal with the negative thoughts that they'll have about themselves. It's one thing for other people to say negative things about you. And if you buy into those, that's certainly not going yeah. to help. But then we also all have those negative thoughts about ourselves. And the problem that most people have is when they have those thoughts about themselves, they fuse with those thoughts, they connect with those thoughts, and they let those thoughts define who they are and how they behave. And despite the fact that I'm a very positive guy, if you spend any time around me, George, you'll know I'm a positive, upbeat guy. I read positive things. I listen to positive things. And it's interesting, though, even though with all of that positive input, I still have negative thoughts from time to time. We all do. It's just the nature of the way that our brain works. And what we've got to learn to do is learn how to separate ourselves from our thoughts, to see those thoughts for what they are. And you know what that is? Nothing more than words or pictures in your head. That's all. They're nothing more than words or pictures in your head. And so if you realize that's all they are, you can decide, you know what? Okay, I hear you, mind. I hear you telling me I'm no good at this or I've failed at this before. But you know what? I'm still going to take action on these things that are most important to me, on the values that I hold dearest, and I'm going to accomplish regardless of the negative thoughts that pop up from time to time. If you can learn how to do that, and that's what I teach people how to do, that's a powerful psychological skill.
Yeah, and being a failure, I don't think anybody should be embarrassed at being a failure if you're failing at something, because I've always said that if you didn't fail, then you wouldn't learn, because failure is a learning tool. You know not to do that again. You know to try something different.
Well, it's kind of part of the the law of polarity. You've got to have you can't have one without the other. You wouldn't really even know what success was unless there was failure. You could not display confidence or courage if you didn't feel fear. And that's another thing that I talk a lot about in my speeches to groups and in my book. And that is that fear is a normal and natural human emotion. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It's our fight or flight response that we're created with. And if you learn how to deal with fear and know that you in order to even be confident or display courage, there has to be a fear element, then that's the same thing with success and failure. You couldn't even know what success was if there wasn't failure.
Exactly. Exactly. So are you working on a second or third book?
I actually have kind of two books in the works. One is one that is most specifically to my athletes, my baseball and softball players that I've worked with and trained for years. It's called Mind Over Batter. And then I have another one that I'm working on called The Secrets of Self-Help Secrets. And that is me helping people overcome some of those things that they've heard for years and years and years that aren't necessarily true about how to be successful and what they say a lot of times in the self-help world.
Okay, Todd, I can send you a link to the show and you can put it on your website that your fans and your clients can come and check you out on the George Wilder Journey Show if you would like that link to the show of this show that you're
sounds
on.
Sounds great. That sounds great. That sounds great. I'd love that.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for being on the show and thanks for sharing. It's been a great, that's a great topic. And talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Todd Thomas on the George Wilder Jr. Show. All righty, Todd Thomas. That was an interesting discussion, folks. So I would probably say go to his website and check all that stuff out. And we will be right back if we can find. Yeah, we got it.
my son has been arrested for walking while black. So I get it.
A lot of sons have been arrested.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. Stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to thank my guest, author Todd Thomas, for doing this show today. And it looks like the minimum wage protesters demonstrate outside of O'Hare Airport. And this is going on all over the country, in some parts of the country at least. Workers fighting for affordable health care. They're fighting for $15, $16 an hour. And they're out there striking. These are cleaners, people who mop up floors. And okay, Ethel Poindexter began working downtown at Northwestern Memorial Hospital, okay, in 1973. Street parking was 10 cents an hour. Good. And she made $4.75 working in food service. Wow. I love working in food service. I didn't know it was that damn low. But 43 years later, she still works in a vast hospital complex, making $22.13 as a surgical assistant. That's not too bad. Poindexter says she loves her job, but that didn't stop her standing with about 100 protesters outside of Huron and McClure, that's downtown Chicago, as they demanded a minimum wage of $15 an hour. Okay. I think they should be going more. I think it should be 16 or 17 because of depreciation along the way and higher food prices and you know, and everything. All that goes together, I think. But they're out there protesting for $15 an hour. I'm surprised the fast food workers are not there. But food service is just, I don't know. It just, why does food service pay is so low? That should be one industry where you should actually make a living at. I mean, many people in food service, they're not being able to make a living at it. I mean, you're working in grocery stores, you're bagging groceries, you scanning groceries, you're working in a restaurant or you're working in a kitchen somewhere. It doesn't, and people love to cook, people love to eat, people want to be working in the food service industry. And I don't understand why the pay is so low, even now. I mean, if you get a job in the food service industry in the city of Chicago, you just might be making what, $8.25 an hour? And, people love to cook. People love to eat. So, and I think working in the food industry, which I have done, is one of the most prestigious jobs around. I mean, people look up to you when you're bringing them their food. They're hungry. They want to eat. So it's just wrong for them to, I think they should be paid $15 an hour, even more. You know, so that's just me. 347-857-1762. I think they should be solely compensated for their work, you know. And I'm sticking up for them. I think they should get it. And I don't, you know, people should make a living wage. If, it doesn't matter what job you have. A job should pay you a living wage. You know, I mean, buy a house, buy a car, buy yourself a condo, or get yourself a decent apartment, a car, a house, you know, clothes, food. A job should pay you enough to live off on, at least decently. I think any job that you get should be a job that's going to take you out of poverty. If a job doesn't take you out of poverty and actually puts you in poverty, or you're staying in poverty, and you, that's not a job to have. But I understand there's a lot of people out here who do have jobs and are homeless. They're going to shelters. I don't think that's fair for someone to be working an 8-hour job or even a part-time job and not being able to afford a decent apartment. I just don't, or even a car. You know, I mean, to me, if you're working at a job, a low-income job, and you're homeless, you're not getting anywhere. There's no doubt about it. If you make a minimum wage and you have a family, you're not getting anywhere. You want to get a job that's going to elevate you to a higher position. You don't want to be staying in the same ruddy-ass job for 5, 10, 15 years, not getting anywhere, except for maybe getting a 5 cents or 10 cent raise here or there. You're still not getting anywhere. It basically, from in my view, a waste of time. So I do support a higher wage for those people out here who are busting their asses. I truly do. And, you know, I think a lot of people out here should also. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell. I was 22. I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card, and I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together. My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence, which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are three times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway, and he started chatting me up. He told me two things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny, and he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy, starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life, which is why that Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. Because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day, his dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me, because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you made sacrifices for your soulmate. So I agreed, and I quit my job, and Connor and I left Manhattan together. I had no idea I was falling into crazy love, that I was walking headfirst into a carefully laid physical, financial, and psychological trap. The next step in the domestic violence pattern is to introduce the threat of violence and see how she reacts. And here's where those guns come in. As soon as we moved to New England, you know that place where Connor was supposed to feel so safe? He bought 3 guns. He kept one in the glove compartment of our car. He kept one under the pillows on our bed. And the third one he kept in his pocket at all times. And he said that he needed those guns because of the trauma he'd experienced as a young boy. He needed them to feel protected. But those guns were really a message for me. And even though he hadn't raised a hand to me, my life was already in grave danger every minute of every day. Connor first physically attacked me 5 days before our wedding. It was 7 a.m. I still had on my nightgown. I was working on my computer trying to finish a freelance writing assignment, and I got frustrated. And Connor used my anger as an excuse to put both of his hands around my neck and to squeeze so tightly that I could not breathe or scream. And he used the chokehold to hit my head repeatedly against the wall. 5 days later, the 10 bruises on my neck had just faded, and I put on my mother's wedding dress, and I married him. Despite what had happened, I was sure we were going to live happily ever after, because I loved him, and he loved me so much. And he was very, very sorry. He had just been really stressed out by the wedding and by becoming a family with me. It was an isolated incident, and he was never going to hurt me again. It happened twice more on the honeymoon. The first time, I was driving to find a secret beach, and I got lost. And he punched me in the side of my head so hard that the other side of my head repeatedly hit the driver's side window. And then a few days later, driving home from our honeymoon, he got frustrated by traffic, and he threw a cold Big Mac in my face. Connor proceeded to beat me once or twice a week for the next 2.5 years of our marriage. I was mistaken in thinking that I was unique and alone in this situation. 1 in 3 American women experiences domestic violence or stalking at some point in her life. And the CDC reports that 15 million children are abused every year. 15 million. So actually, I was in very good company. Back to my question. Why did I stay? The answer is easy. I didn't know he was abusing me. Even though he held those loaded guns to my head, pushed me downstairs, threatened to kill our dog, pulled the key out of the car ignition as I drove down the highway, poured coffee grinds on my head as I dressed for a job interview, I never once thought of myself as a battered wife. Instead, I was a very strong woman in love with a deeply troubled man, and I was the only person on earth who could help Connor face his demons. The other question everybody asks is, why doesn't she just leave? Why didn't I walk out? I could have left any time. To me, this is the saddest and most painful question that people ask, because we victims know something you usually don't. It's incredibly dangerous to leave an abuser, because the final step in the domestic violence pattern is kill her. Over 70% of domestic violence murders happen after the victim has ended the relationship, after she's gotten out, because then the abuser has nothing left to lose. Other outcomes include long-term stalking, even after the abuser remarries, denial of financial resources, and manipulation of the family court system to terrify the victim and her children, who are regularly forced by family court judges to spend unsupervised time with the man who beat their mother. And still we ask, why doesn't she just leave? I was able to leave because of one final sadistic beating that broke through my denial. I realized that the man who I loved so much was going to kill me if I let him. So I broke the silence. I told everyone. The police, my neighbors, my friends and family, total strangers. And I'm here today because you all helped me. We tend to stereotype victims as grisly headlines, self-destructive women, damaged goods. The question, why does she stay, is code for some people for it's her fault for staying. As if victims intentionally choose to fall in love with men intent upon destroying us. But since publishing Crazy Love, I have heard hundreds of stories from men and women who also got out, who learned an invaluable life lesson from what happened, and who rebuilt lives, joyous, happy lives, as employees, wives, and mothers, lives completely free of violence, like me. Because it turns out that I'm actually a very typical domestic violence victim and a typical domestic violence survivor. I remarried a kind and gentle man. We have those three kids. I have that black lab, and I have that minivan. What I will never have again, ever, is a loaded gun held to my head by someone who says that he loves me. Now, right now, maybe you're thinking, wow, this is fascinating. Or, wow, how stupid was she? But this whole time, I've actually been talking about you. I promise you, there are several people listening to me right now who are currently being abused, or who were abused as children, or who are abusers themselves. Abuse could be affecting your daughter, your sister, your best friend right now. I was able to end my own crazy love story by breaking the silence. I'm still breaking the silence today. It's my way of helping other victims. And it's my final request of you. Talk about what you heard here. Abuse thrives only in silence. You have the power to end domestic violence simply by shining a spotlight on it. We victims need everyone. We need every one of you to understand the secrets of domestic violence. Show abuse the light of day by talking about it with your children, your coworkers, your friends and family. Recast survivors as wonderful, lovable people with full futures. Recognize the early signs of violence and conscientiously intervene, de-escalate it, show victims a safe way out. Together, we can make our beds, our dinner tables, and our families the safe and peaceful oases they should be. Thank you.
Yeah, domestic violence is a serious topic. It always has been. And it's something that I'm very adamant about because I have seen it. I have experienced it firsthand, happening to young women, ladies, women, even family members. So I've seen it and I'm against it. And I think it's wrong. And I've had guests on the show saying that some of the women who are in domestic violence relationships are actually the culprits themselves. I can see that. I can really see that. But that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it something that should be going on, you know. And we just have to find a way of eradicating it. majority, like she said, a majority of the domestic violence violators are men. 85% of it are men. But it does, women do beat up on men, but it's just a small percentage. It's basically the men, the young men, the thugs, the criminals, the gangbangers, police officers. I mean, you name it, movie stars, athletes, anybody of all incomes. It doesn't matter. It happens, you know, everywhere. Everywhere it happens. And it's happening right now as I speak. Some woman is getting plummeted, verbally abused by some guy who's pissed off at the world. The kids are being beaten. We have to shine a light on this. We have to, I mean, as long as there is people out there who willing to, who are willing not to say anything, not to do anything, not to bring it to the light of day, it's going to keep going on. And as I've said many times on the show, when a woman is abused and she doesn't do anything about it, it's only going to get worse. How many times have you heard or read in the news some guy stalking some woman, even all the way up, going all the way onto her job site where she works, and shoots her? I've heard that too many times. She's trying to get out of the relationship. She's trying to get away from him. And he stalks her. He finds her, takes a gun, and he blows her brains out. Then he blows his own brains out. I don't know what it is. I don't know why guys want to beat up on women. It happens. And yes, sometimes it's the woman's fault. Because, you know, there are women out here who will egg men on to hit them. And they're, this is crazy, but some women find being beat up sexy. Some women will say that if my man didn't beat on me, that meant he did not love me. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. Some women out here, yeah, they egg the man on to beat them. They bring it on themselves. But then I'm thinking the majority of the women out here are smarter than that. You are smarter than that. If you are in a domestic violence relation, get out of it. Get the hell out of it, or you will wind up dead, period. And your children would not have a will not have a mother. Bring some attention to what is happening to you. Bring some attention to it. Let people know. Tell everybody. Because whether you open your mouth about domestic violence or not, that guy is going to constantly come after you until you are dead. You know, he's going to come after you, your husband, your boyfriend, your partner, whatever it is. Get out of it if it's violent, abusive. Why would you stay there? Why would you take it like that? All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Once again, I want to thank my guest, Todd Thomas, for being on the show and doing a great job. This is the Talk About Time, and we're now on the air. We're just about off the air. I think we got about 15 more minutes into the show, something like that. Okay, don't forget to download my short story from Amazon, George Wilder Jr., Merry Christmas, Mason Featherstone. It's a great story. It's a heartfelt story. I had a great time writing it. It's entertaining, it's warm, and it's thoughtful. And it's just in time for the holidays. Wow. All right, make sure you do that, folks. Okay, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I love that spot that I just got through doing on domestic violence, because it is totally going on. And earlier I talked about the violence in the city of Chicago, and it's a mess. It's a mess. I mean, I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. I do think that we need new leadership in the city of Chicago. And if this type of violence is happening where you are, you should stand up and say something about it too. Just do not sit back and take it. Do not sit back hoping someone else is going to fight your battles for you. You get out there and fight your battles. That's the way it goes. Because there's too many people sitting back, you know, pizza, beer, or hand around a girlfriend and waiting for someone else to fight their battles, the issues that they care about. Fight your own battles. Get out there and get in the fray of fighting about your own issues. Look at these people protesting every day for $15 an hour. They're fighting their own battles. They're not sitting back. They're out there on their own doing this because they know that if they don't get out there, nothing's going to happen. So do not sit back and wait for somebody else to fight your battles. Get out there and fight your own battles. You know, I mean, if you want something, fight for it. If you don't want anything, then do not fight for it. Don't fight for it. But this show is all about making the world a better place, one show at a time, one book at a time, one story at a time. And my name is George Wilder Jr. And this, you're listening to the talk of our times. Be the best at what you do, and then no one will be able to replace you in certain circumstances. I mean, you know, if you die, somebody's got to replace you. But basically, you know what I'm talking about. Be the best at what you do, and then no one, and that's true. If you're good at something, if you're good at making hamburgers, if you're good at making cars, if you're good at building skyscrapers or whatever you do, be good, be the best. Then you don't worry about, if you're the best, you don't worry about losing your job. Because you know what? You're going to be promoted. You know, so be the best at what you do, no matter what you do. If you're sweeping the sidewalk off, if you're sweeping the sidewalk every morning, be the best of it. If you're mopping the floor at your employment, be the best floor mopper there is until you is able to do better and get something, a better job. But it doesn't matter what you do. Be the best. If you're a stockbroker, if you're working in a corporation, you know what I'm saying? Be the best that you can do. If you're a CEO, be the best CEO that you can be so you will not be replaced. If you're a ball player, be the best ball player. If you're a football player, be the best football player. And they will have trouble trying to replace you. And that's the truth, folks. One more time, be the best at whatever you do. I mean, whatever you do. Be the best at it, and you're going to stay there for a while because nobody's going to replace you. They're not going to replace you. You're too good at what you do. You know, you're saving them money, whatever, you know. So be the best at what you do. It will pay off in the end, folks. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Be the best that you can do. It will pay off in the end. Always does. Thank you.
My son has been arrested for walking while black. I get it.
A lot of sons have been
arrested. Yeah, I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's just happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
All right, they're saying that Eddie Murphy was going to be in Star Trek IV. Eddie Murphy, we all know who Eddie Murphy is, or we should, but something major went wrong. Star Trek Voyage Home writer explains Eddie Murphy's lost role. So what did he do? Why did he? I never liked too many of Eddie Murphy's movies. His earlier movies were okay, but the later ones were just, I think there was something called A Vampire in New York or Brooklyn. That's just awful. Okay, the Voyage Home writer explains how Eddie Murphy was replaced with Catherine Hicks. Okay. All right. Star Trek IV, Voyage Home, arguably the best of the Star Trek films, had time travel, a mission to save the whales or something, and that now infamous punk kid. And it's almost had a role for Eddie Murphy. They almost had a role. Screenwriter Steve Merson discussed what happened in the interview with the Hollywood Reporter, where he explained how Murphy was eventually replaced by Catherine Hicks. Mercer worked on the screenplay with his writing partner, Peter Kites, along with Harve Benedict. Well, I don't know these people, okay? As he told some magazine, it was always the same story that approved. Okay, but the original draft included a part for Eddie Murphy, okay? Eddie was on the lot at Paramount at the time and arguably was the biggest star in the world, in the world, okay? They had told us that he was a huge star. All right, Murphy would be played, okay? At the beginning of the process, it was actually a lot of fun, okay? It became more political. Okay, it just the way things are in the business. We began to feel like a certain point that this was going to be taken away from us. So, in fact, it was. I don't know. They're saying that he was a bigger star than anybody. And I don't know. I'm going to get more into it tomorrow because we're just about off the air now, folks. So I want to thank once again my guest, author Todd Thomas, for being on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And it was fun. I had a great time. I hope you had a great time listening. If you didn't get a chance to call in today, call in tomorrow, 347-857-1762. And we're just about off the air. We're going to see if we can't do this.
Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
Bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw. Heaven help us all. Heaven a troubled world, I pray the Lord to keep. Keep hatred from the mighty and the mighty from the small.
All right, we're back, and thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget to download my short story from Amazon, Merry Christmas, because it's that time of the season. Happy holidays to all. It's been fun. I had a great time on the show. I want to thank my guest once again, Todd Thomas, for being a wonderful guest. And we're always around here trying to make the world a better place. I hope you join me in that effort. I can't do it alone. I'm going to need you. Okay. And always try to be the best you can be. It's always the same. It's be the best at what you do. Then nobody will be able to replace you. All right. We're going to go off the air. It's over now, folks. And but join me tomorrow. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow on Black Talk Radio right here. Internet Radio. Show. They say I have 60 minutes. Oh my God. All right, everybody. Thanks for your time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for podcasting. Bye bye. See you tomorrow. Same time, same station, same internet station. Here we go.